Good morrow, apprenticeship diaries. Listen. Okay, redo that because I came in booming.
Okay. The Apprenticeship Diaries, where raw meets refined. What it took, what it takes, and the stories that are made. Sit back and relax and join us for interviews with top tattoo artists.
Good morrow, Apprenticeship Diaries listeners. This is your host,
Amy Nichols,
and your co-host, Rico Iliano.
And we're doing a podcast today. We didn't have an interview, even though we talked about probably getting one. We didn't get one.
We were fishing again.
We did go fishing again.
That's what we're doing all summer, all the time.
Well, I'm going to
And have- it's been our grocery store.
I have to line up interviews at some point.
Oh, I know.
I know. It has been our...
Lining up some striped bass.
Some striped bass. It's an immersive amount of time, which I like. We're having fun this weekend quite a bit, which is good. It's very healing.
Yeah, we're going fishing again tomorrow.
It's very healing.
Got a bunch of white perch. Actually, I just got done eating some white perch. Because her fish recipes are amazing. Maybe we'll... Actually, because this is going to be another short little gem for you guys, let's talk about your fish recipes.
Yeah, yeah. If you want
they
to
are
me.
Fucking stellar.
Should I give them mine? If they're gonna talk about theirs,
them what you're gonna do. Yeah.
What I'm gonna do or what?
No, like
I did.
What you did for the recipes.
All right. So I'll tell you guys. I came across this. I was looking up a recipe for rockfish or striped bass. And I came across this one, but I didn't have all of the access because it's not a normal grocery experience every time you go these days. So I wasn't able to get serrano peppers, but I used jalapenos instead, which are perfectly fine.
Oh, yeah.
And instead of capers, I used caper berries.
Oh, definitely better.
Yeah.
I know for a fact because capers are delicious, but... Those caper berries, man.
So it's a lot. It's you make a relish out of olive oil, caper berries. I didn't put it in this time, but I did the one time, the salsa verde, which was good. I liked that as an insertion. I put shallots. One shallot. I put a jalapeno. I dice it up. And then we use the slap chop when we make the relish. And I'm trying to think what else I put in. And I coat all of the white perch or rockfish in lemon. That's the biggest thing. And I've been dumping a little bit of the caperberry brine in there. So basically, we slap chop it all up, dice it up real fine, and then we mix it all up together. And then there's this Caribbean seasoning that we use.
No, that's Caribbean. The Cajun.
Oh, it's Cajun.
Cajun, yeah, Louisiana.
Oh. Okay, so it's a Cajun, Louisiana Cajun.
The brand.
Yep. And we sprinkle the fish with that. With the white perch, I put salt on it, truffle salt. And then I think the immersion in the citrus is really important when you're dealing with like a more oily fish or like a fish of the sea because they tend to be, you know, pretty fishy. So to remove that fish taste, citrus is really good. And this, there's so much like strong flavors in it. It's the right amount of spice. When you say like it has the right amount of heat, the white perch is different. It kind of just, it like curbs the taste of the fish and it adds a nice flavor. But with the when you put the relish on top of the actual rockfish, it's amazing. Like because you get that all those flavors within the fillet, so you get to enjoy it on a fillet. I like both ways, but yeah, this recipe is really really good. And I've blended it before, like just blended everything up. I usually use an emulsifier when I want to, like really make it. Liquid. I do that when I do our mango chili lime.
Oh, what's the problem with that one?
Rockfish. Yeah,
yes,
this one.
Definitely. Holy
this
fuck.
One's good. I take a clementine and I squeeze it and then I emulsify a whole mango. Mm-hmm. And then I coat two fillets of rockfish, and then I sprinkle them heavily with this chili lime rub that we use.
It's the Weber's. Yes. Weber's chili lime rub. That way you guys can know exactly what we're using so you can duplicate. Oh. And these recipes are not meant to be like strictly adhered to. Make them your own. Mm-hmm. You know, like modify them. Because like with fish, you want like punch you in the mouth flavor because you don't want that fishy flavor. And Amy,
well, most people don't.
Yeah. No, yeah. Nobody wants, like, nobody really enjoys the taste of fish. Fish is a beautiful texture. Mm-hmm. It's a very good protein. It's very light. It goes through the digestion very easily. But fuck, man, nobody wants to taste the fish.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, I think that for me, it's about using that texture and that flavor and applying other flavors to it that complement it well and bring out the best, and usually citrus, because it's so acidic, it cuts that oil of the fish and it gets rid of that smell. Plus lemons are astringent anyway. Plus they're really, really good for killing any bacteria, as your dad would say, like, you know, I hope I don't freak anybody out, but it makes all the little worms come out of the fish.
Yeah. There's an FYI for you. All saltwater fish, salmon, are not freshwater fish. They originally start out in the ocean. Well, they start out in the river, then they go to an ocean. They're an ocean fish. Then they go back to the rivers. But salmon also have the worms in them because they're predominantly like saltwater fish. Well, if you take any piece of saltwater fish and you submerge it in lemons, these little clear, I mean, you can barely fucking see them. You really got to be like dialed in to see them. They'll start coming out of the meat because the acid's killing them. But you've eaten them. You can actually eat them like raw. These worms are not going to do anything the second they hit your stomach acid.
Yeah.
It's like fucking hitting hot lava for them. They're incinerated.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you ever see that shit, you're fine.
If they're running because of lemons, then they're obviously freaking out. Yeah.
And these worms are very, very tiny. And like I said, they're clear. Now, if you see other like types, like, you know, in your meat, whatever, that are substantial, like, fuck that, man. Like, abandon that. That's, no, these things are barely noticeable. Like, that's what's all in every saltwater fish. They're barely noticeable.
Yeah. So, yeah, so. I like just what it does to the flavor because it cuts all of that real thick, oily kind of taste. And this time I put a clementine in with the white perch with the caper and garlic and shallots and all of that. It's a really good, I don't recommend it if you don't like spicy things. Like if you have problems with something that's spice oriented, I wouldn't suggest that. Either one, really. The mango's sweeter.
Yeah. We're about to modify that though. What?
We want to try it with jalapenos.
Yeah, mango jalapeno, like.
But I also want to give it a little bit more heat, which I think will be better.
You know what I think we should do? Instead of emulsifying it, the jalapenos we should just slice up into rings and place them on the fish. That way you can get a whole...
Oh, okay. I think that'd be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
Or you can take a little bit of the jalapenos, mix them in with the mango, and then put jalapeno slices on top.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. We can make it like a relish, too, and dice it up, and that way you get it with every bite.
Actually, fuck it. Let's blend it all up first, and then we'll try my idea the next time around.
No, I like the idea of texture. That all right, contrast. Cool.
Dynamic contrast.
Yeah. So as you guys can tell, we've been cooking a lot, and I love cooking. Well, I mean, there's a romance to it when you've accepted what you've done. Like, I think this is something that
I just like eating.
Well, I like eating, but I've experienced a lot of different realities eating. I've been a vegetarian. I've been a vegan. I didn't do it well. I have friends that do it well. They really take the time, as I'm taking the time, to hunt my food. I just honestly feel like there's something to the level of control about it and the responsibility to your environment that I like. Within being a hunter, we're not taking more than what we're allowed. We're eating it. We're cooking good meals with it. It's, you know, it's our local environment. Anybody who tells you about like you know, honey and things like that. You get exposed to antibodies of your environment when you eat of it. You know, we coexist with it. We notice trends in it. Like, his dad literally knows places to go. He knows what to look for. He knows what to recognize in other fishermen and you know, just the reactions of certain things, the tide. It's a neat thing to analyze. And I would imagine that every form of hunting has its same kind of process. I mean, I've watched things like Meat Eater, Steve Ranello, and I don't know. There's something very attractive about that for me. I mean, everybody likes Great British Baking, which, you know, baking is innocent, you know, at least the way we see it. But I just see a lot of gluten and sugar, which is nice every once in a while. But on the whole, I think if you're gonna if you're gonna teach people to be healthy, bless you.
Ah, sorry about that, guys.
It's either you have to teach them about how to supplement their diet in a very vitamin-rich way by diversifying it as a good vegan and taking in enough protein, which, you know, people who do it well know how to do that. Or you eat meat, and that's where my default lied, because I didn't have the interest in putting together a lot of the vegan meals. They were very labor intensive, and I just didn't have the stick-to-itness, to be honest with you. I think I presumed that I wouldn't be able to kill something, and that's wrong. I am able to kill things. At this point, I'm fine.
Well, honestly, veganism, like, on my hat's off to you, because that's a hell of a discipline. Like, you got to be disciplined to do that shit, but it's not healthy to just eat vegetables, man. You have canines in your mouth for a reason.
Well, I mean, it didn't do good for me. I can say. And I had medical professionals tell me to do it for aesthetic reasons. Like, oh, you know, if your hair is weak, you know, how much meat are you eating? How much protein? I was like, well, I haven't even measured. So they were like, well, you know, you have to eat X amount. And if you're not eating meat, you definitely have to. And I was not aware. And my hair suffered, my nails suffered, my body suffered, my joints suffered. Ultimately, my joints were the worst out of all of it, because all the rest, as soon as you start eating, repair. But with your joints, you can feel better with exercise because your muscles got your back. But
yeah, it helps solidify that thing.
Yeah, but the actual joint itself just, you know, kind of has a lingering, dull, shitty feeling that has its moments where it feels really bad. Mm-hmm. Yep. But yeah, this episode, we didn't want to go too long for you guys. We wanted to keep it brief and short, you know.
And you wanted to answer someone's question?
Yeah, that's what I was going to announce, was the question itself. We got asked a question this week by one of our listeners, and they were very interested in the idea of what I interpret to be kind of how you vet your clients and how you interact with your clientele. So it's taken me a while to learn how to do this. I have to give a lot of my observation of this to my former employer, John Garanceschi. He's really good at vetting clients and thinking in a very good way towards interacting with people and trying to get what you want out of them when you're trying to, you know, work with somebody. And the most important thing is to ask, I think. Ask beyond what you sometimes feel comfortable with. Because at the end of everything, the ultimate goal is that everyone's happy, right? And I think that was something that I learned even before John in a lot of ways when I cut hair. And I think that was a very grounding thing for me when it came to interpersonal relationships, is that you learn how to talk to somebody to imbue trust and confidence. Because the reality is that I didn't get into doing this job, this profession, to mess it up. That's not my intention. So the only thing you can do within any of those situations is be earnest about your intentions, your own abilities, and what you know you're going to deliver this person if they let you take lead in what you know how to do. For instance, when I go to get my oil changed, for example, I'm not hovering over the people who are doing my oil. I'm sure there are people who do that, but I don't do that. I trust that that person's going to do my oil well. And if they don't, if something happens that's outside of the realm of what I find acceptable, I don't go to that place again. Now, it's apples to oranges in some respects when you're talking about a permanent thing, which is your body, which is why I think it's really, really important to vet your clients well when it comes down to being a tattoo artist. So let me go into that. One, I think that it's important to know what your style is, what your brand is, what you're going for. Currently with me, the things that I'm interested in are animals, bugs, faces, people. I like theology. I like things that have a little bit of a narrative. I would describe myself as collage, illustrative, painterly, expressive. These are adjectives, words, subject matter that I can frame what I'm going.
Trash polka.
Trash polka is one of them. These are kind of things that you can actually do a Google search of on your own as a potential client, and you can research these things and they make sense to you in a way that you can educate yourself about. So that's one. Two, you have your portfolio out there. You only want to show stuff, I feel, that you're proud of, that you want to do more of. So when it comes to a portfolio, it's not about quantity, it's about quality. That can't be stressed enough. It's better to show two pictures that are awesome than a bunch of shitty ones, because people get tired of shitty photos after three and they'll just stop looking. But if you captivate them with one photo, they might just follow you for that one photo and be like, oh, I don't know this person, but I'm going to give them a chance because at least they have good taste, you know, like, and so that's the power of visual. And I think that's also what people need to understand when you're in the business of helping other people recognize their own personal branding, because that's what you're in the business of. Again, my job started out as a hair industry professional. So it was all about teaching people about how to brand and how to exhibit self and what was comfortable, what was going to serve them, what was something they were going to be able to pull off themselves. Because with hair, it's very, very expedited. You know, you have to give somebody a look that they know that they're going to be able to accomplish on their day-to-day in between haircuts, because then they're coming back. Well, with tattooing, it's something where you have more autonomy within that, and you ultimately have to perform this thing, and then they have to maintain for a lifetime after this through sun exposure, through accidents that might happen, lacerations. I've had electricians that have had wires kick back at them and lacerate through their entire tattoos. So like, yeah, there's a lot of,
I can only guess who that shit fucking happened to. Yeah.
And so for anyone who's listening, that's a client, these are some things to look out for. I think when you're vetting your own tattoo experience, is because you want somebody who you can communicate with and who's able to use a lot of different kinds of forms of communication to speak to you and meet you. For example, Rico was saying, you know, you shouldn't link your Facebook page, because if you don't want people contacting you there, don't put it there. But for me, it was about exposure. I want all the exposure, but I've set up my life so that all of the channels, all of the avenues that people ultimately get vetted through, I have made everyone aware that I answer emails via my contact form on my website. So you have to go to my website, and it's listed. Anywhere that I have exposure, it's listed. You can find it. And if you can't, let me know. Like, please let me know, because that's what I also rely on, my community of clients to let me know is that if I'm not serving them as well as I can, I want to do better. So I ask all of you to keep me accountable as well. And that's part of the vetting process too, is that I have a consultation. Most of my clients wait for about a year. Today it's about a year. It's going to be a little bit longer for this next round because I've been off for like, 3.5 months? Like I haven't been tattooing. So it's even more delayed when I have to get through my current obligations and email everybody and get them rebooked and give them the opportunity to rebook the amount of tattoo appointments that they had and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, which by the way, I don't tend to book out, physically book out more than 90 days. Like I don't do more than 3 months at a time because I feel like that's a great rate of accepting projects, letting people kind of see if they're going to book all the way through to the end of their projects and get their, you know, tattoos complete, or are they going to fall off? It happens. I've done it. I have an unfinished neck piece right now. Sorry, Jake, up in PA, but we've all been on pause, but I have no excuse because I went a whole year without seeing him, I think, and getting tattooed. I mean, I saw him, we interviewed him, but I didn't get tattooed.
I went to that awesome restaurant.
I know. I forgot what it was called. It was Harvest something.
Harvest Moon. No.
Is it? I think it was called Harvest, but I'm not sure if that was the full name, but it's in PA and it's like a seasonal farm to table kind of place, you know, that has a really good menu, rotating menu, and they really like that. And it just reopened in PA. So I'm happy about that for them. They were able to go recently. But yeah, when it comes to getting in touch with my clients, I like to say it like I put a lot of walls up between me and my clientele because unfortunately, as much as I would like to accommodate everyone the way I tattoo, I cannot accommodate that many people with that much intensity because the kind of connection and the kind of art I want to do, I want to very, very, very much so deliver to people who want to commit a larger part of their body. That's not a requirement. It's preferable though, that I get the ability to spread out because tattoos in my experience, in my viewing of them long-term look better when they're able to be given room and given space. So I think that you can have really, really, really lovely tattoo that only goes on one corner of your body, but if you give it a corner of your body to take up, like your whole right side of your back or something, the look of your back and into your bum line, if you let it extend below even your pant line at times, can really set off the entire back of your body. Like if you were to just be standing there naked or having a bikini on, could completely set off your body. So I think that for me, I really like to impact people's overall visual from afar. That's what I'm into. But you just got to get into what you're into. A lot of the girls that I worked with didn't like, you know, doing huge things. They would rather do things they could complete in a day. So figure out what you're into and then advertise for it. Push for it often. Be prolific about what you love to do. Put that out often. I can say that in the beginning of my career, I gave away a lot of work to friends of mine. I offered to do a lot of things on the house so that I could show people what I could do. Because a big part of it is in the beginning, if you don't have enough examples of what you can do, you have to be willing to sacrifice something big to the tattoo gods, if you will. So you've got to put your time and energy and attention to something that is purely a gift to those gods. And I do think that if you, you know, imbibe in any kind of religious concept, there's the concept of, you know, putting in tithings. And they say it's about it's like 10% of your energy. So I feel like it's like that 10% that you kind of go, this is my forever sacrifice to the thing that I love and that I worship and that I care about, is that I'm going to constantly be willing to give myself in time and energy and in, you know, risk, honestly, of, I mean, almost no one that I have given stuff to with the promise that they would showcase my art have actually come through to do it. All of the clients, like most of the clients that say that they are going to come to tattoo conventions have and showcase my work. And mm-hmm. for them, I salute you. But for the ones that I've given work away to, very few have exhibited that work and showcased it.
See, for we go to conventions, you do, you know, cover my chest like you're going to. I'll fucking exhibit that shit.
I know.
I will enter that shit in the competition.
Well, and, you know, that's the thing is that I do. I think that, you know, beyond relationships, beyond all things, like I have tattoo work of people that I no longer work with, people that no longer even like me. So, but I mm-hmm. still love the artwork of it. Like that's my life. That's my history. I don't dislike the artwork. I genuinely like the artwork. Like I like that moment in time that I was with that person, that we made something together. Like that matters. So that's never bad to me. And that's kind of what I hope to cultivate with my clients. And I think they sincerely feel that from me in everything that I do. And the other thing is just simple. There's a lot of things. There's like body mechanics and dynamics, body language. I don't cage myself in. I don't lock my arms. I don't do a lot of things that tell people that I'm shy or afraid or anxious. I usually drop myself to their level, eye contact wise, or I put them above me so that they can kind of talk to me as they're going to be when they're sitting, getting a tattoo. Cause I'm going to be below them a lot of the time, talking up at them or not even making eye contact with them. So, you know, it's a good stance for anybody who's getting a tattoo, I feel, to consult with them that way, because I feel like they feel more comfortable, cause they don't feel like they're really being interviewed. It mm-hmm. hasn't always gone that way given the chair that I have, but I usually default to, like, if there's a stool with wheels on it, I'll pick the stool and let mm-hmm. them have the chair, you know, like something like that. But I let them kind of have high ground and when they're trying to communicate what they want. Because I think that's, you know, that's a hard thing to ask of people sometimes. You know, sometimes they've been thinking about ideas so long that it's so vast and they don't even know where to start. Like they're just, they have this packet of pictures and they're like, I don't even know. This is the stuff I've been looking at, help. And then you look at it and then you have to be honest too. You have to be honest of whether or not you think you can help them. Because I've looked at a lot of designs and said, you know, honestly, I don't think I'm your girl. And I think that it's important to have that kind of integral vetting of the things that you do too, especially when it's putting things permanently on people. If you think it can be done better, send somebody to have it be done better, because it's not good karma for you to try to be a poor person so-and-so. It's not even advantageous in the long run unless you're not hoping on being in tattooing for very long. And as somebody who's done it for 11 years and would like to physically be able to do it for probably another 10 more before I stop, you know, and I would only stop if it meant another phase in my evolution in another art form, you know, like if the podcast took off, for example, and all of you guys like to listen to me talk, maybe that might help graduate me out of it. Maybe I'll just do art and diversify my art in some way that's really cool, online. But yeah, like tattooing is something that I feel like if you're going to do it from an artistic custom level, you should probably really like people, and you should like advising people about how best to wear your art, and you shouldn't let them overly take the lead. Because one thing that I think John kind of framed for me was that if people knew what they wanted, they could have done it themselves, or they could show you exactly it. They can give you little clues to get there, but they can't necessarily tell you what they want because
they don't even know what they want for real.
Well, and they want something that's never been. So that's the thing, is that when you're getting a custom work done, you're getting something that has never been before. So when you talk about it, you have to talk about it in terms of visual things. Like you have to use a lot of language. You have to communicate things visually. You have to do it audibly sometimes. Like if, if you want something to be high in contrast, for example, you really want it to pop out from a distance, then, you know, saying it like that makes it very clear to a tattoo artist. Like, I want it to have high contrast, which means to me that they want something that has a lot of graphic elements to it, that has very contrasting color, perhaps. I would ask, you know, do you want color? Do you want black and gray? I wouldn't assume anything unless I was an artist that just purely did line work, like purely did, you know, line work based tattoos. I'm sure that a lot of those people get all the time, like, hey, can you do a color portrait for me? Maybe not all the time, but you get to a point where I don't think many people contact you other than what you do. But and that's the point. That's the point, people. Like, because if you're loving doing something and you're loving your art and you're, you know, 100% being pulled through by your art and your way of drawing and your expression, then you're going to defend that until it looks like something that's consistent. And people just go, no, it's what you do. Whatever you do, I like what you do. Do it. Like, I'm confident. And that's what you end up getting. I can't say that I have that 100% because I feel like there's room for interpretation in what I do. I do like to siphon from other people's like art and be influenced by it. So I think mine is definitely very collagey. I like the collage element of it. And I also like the kind of faux painting kind of element to it. Mm-hmm. I think it's neat to create textures on skin that are not a part of a lot of tattoo work. And I would want to, in goals, I want to have more contrast. I want my things to register even better, more and more from larger distances. And I don't think that they have that quite yet, but I'm hoping that I will get that about me and continue to push that in my work. But yeah, have a consultation form, have a contract, I definitely recommend getting a deposit from people and lets them know that you're serious. Mine is anywhere from $150 to $300, depending on project, because I like doing bigger projects, but you can gauge that for yourself. Mm-hmm. I don't do walk-ins, so nope. That's another thing. I don't have to deal with the public at mass. I wouldn't prefer that. I mean, there's a lot of people who love the walk-in shop element and they love just tattooing smaller things that are accomplished. And, you know, people walk in and they walk out.
There's tradesmen.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, they know how to draw. Like if you asked for, you know, I don't know, a cookie, you just pick up cookies. If you want a little cookie and they just draw a little cookie for you and you're like, yeah, just like that. And then they make this commitment in a second to get this cookie that this guy just drew. It looks like a cookie, but like maybe it's not the best cookie because it was drawn, you know, it was just drawn right there.
I'm eating a cookie right now.
Yeah, he's eating a gluten-free cookie. Nature's Promise. They're really delicious. Good, by the way. The softer ones. They're the chocolate chip cookies.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very good. But if you go into a place like that and that's kind of the agreement, then nobody can really be mad about what they get. And I also like to, when people sign a consent form for me to tattoo them, I give them a copy of most things, a copy of everything. So they get a copy either emailed to them or physically handed to them of the agreement that I've written down. And within the consultation, I make all these notes. So if I don't send it to them via scan, then I will make a copy physically of what I've written down and hand it to them, so that there's so many points of accountability for everyone. It adds a gravitas to the way that you handle yourself, you handle your client, you handle what they're doing. Because let's be for real, what we're doing as tattoo artists is change people's physical appearance. Let's
be for real, a lot of us didn't know what gravitas is.
It adds a feeling of weight, of substance to something.
So it's like you put some gravity in that ass.
yeah.
Gravitas.
That'll be your way of remembering. Yeah, exactly. Like you're basically adding an air to your whole. I mean, there's a performance element to it too, because people like to be entertained, and if you can entertain them along with tattooing them, that's an element to your tattoo skills that is very intrinsic to your style and your process that people really enjoy. I mean, I think that personality and that connection with your client is pretty cool, especially if you hope to explore certain things or you're not 100% sure about how you want to tattoo necessarily. Like maybe you're really skilled, but you don't, I mean, that was me for a long time, was that I didn't know what I wanted to do until I started seeing a lot of Jay Freestyle's work. And I was like, holy shit, dude, like, I love this. Like, this is literally like everything in one thing. Like it's hard to communicate to your client what you're thinking until you show them. But if you have a consistent enough timeline where you've been doing similar things like that, and people have seen overwhelmingly that they just like what you make, you pretty much can show them anything and then just have a dialogue with them. I mean, I have to have more of a dialogue than probably a lot of people, but I like to give my clients the ability to insert a little bit of themselves in there. There are some people who demand complete autonomy when they're designing, and I don't. I want to have that dialogue. I like their anxiety to be low. I like my client to know that they can trust me, know that they can talk to me, know that they don't have to feel like a dickhead or whatever to get what they want. And that was something I used to do when I did hair too. It's like, I used to start new client conversations like, look, I didn't get into hair to mess up yours. So let's try to work together. And if we do that, and if we're very clear and honest with each other, this is going to be great.
Yep.
This is going to be awesome. So I think the biggest thing to mitigate any kind of traction, or I guess traction, any kind of conflict in your acquiring client thing, it's kind of like speed dating. Like if you would never call that person back, or if it was really that kind of gut wrenching, you know, kind of your body telling you, don't move forward with this. Don't move forward with it. Like that's your mm-hmm. body's natural responses telling you not to move forward. And as a female tattoo artist, I think that's important to do, because, you know, if you work in a private studio, if you work, late at night or whatever, I mean, not to say that there's guys that don't get accosted as well. They're probably just as likely to happen. I don't want to make assumptions, but, you know, if you're worried about that on a female level, I feel like a lot of it is the understanding that we're helping each other out and that we're trying to do something very sacred for each other in the space that you kind of got to be a really bad person to want to go after your tattoo artist. That's a person who,
all business owners should be armed.
I don't
give a shit if you're a tattoo artist, restaurant, whatever. There should be someone armed.
I mean, I think that you should feel
especially secure. Especially as a female.
Well, I think you should feel secure with your environment enough to know how to act if you need to do something. So
if you're Karen, you're secure with any environment.
Well, anybody who, like, for example, I'll admit this. I have a friend and a client who is a firefighter, and I told him the situation of our house, and he's like, you have to get a ladder to vacate your house. Well, the ladder's upstairs. It's in your closet, but it's still folded up, and I have yet to run this drill, but he was like, you know, as somebody who's a trained, you know, firefighter and somebody who knows the potential of certain scenarios, the only way to guard yourself against a scenario where you're going to be in the actual line of danger, it's a lot like bloodborne pathogen awareness. It's best practices. You have to drill what you do. Just like we caught a skate today. I hooked a skate today, and Rico was like, "Fight it, babe! Fight it! Fight it!" And his dad was like, "Just cut it loose, Rico. You know."
It's a big ass 40-pound fucking skate, man.
Right?
Cow nose ray, not a skate. My bad. It's a type of stingray.
Yeah.
Google cow nose ray. They're fucking beastly.
And they're really hard to bring in because of their non-aerodynamics when they're fighting you. And it was making my wrists hurt. And he wanted me to experience fighting a fish because he's like, you know, if we bring in anything big,
good Lord,
I want you to know how to do it. And I was, you know, doing it. You like to narrate everything, so I'm gonna have to get past your narration and get into my own zone.
But what do you mean?
Everything, you're always like, be careful, watch that, watch your fingers, do this. And I'm like, all right, cool.
Yeah, because you're reeling in a fish, and I'm trying to teach you because you've never really fished like this before. I'm trying to teach you
how
to catch the fish properly.
You do it while I'm cutting things up on a cutting board.
Oh, because the way you hold things, like any chef would be like,
I know, but like that's to that level. If you're, for example, I would feel bad about selling a really high-end hairdryer that's $180 to somebody who wasn't drying hair to the level that a hairdresser does. It's kind of unnecessary. Like, yes, could you own really, really sharp knives that are chef knives and have that be your kitchen experience? Absolutely. But that means having a high-end volume of cooking behind you that is to the level of a chef. And when you're professionally providing food for people, the level to which you are cooking is so much more demanding, vast, that you have to have those kind of best practices. Yes, as a layman, could I benefit from knowing those things a little bit more? Sure. But as a layman also, you have to think about the sheer volume of times that I'm even going to be exposed. It's like you're not going to drown until you get into the pool. Like, why are we talking about drowning statistics if I'm on land? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's kind of me. Like, we can talk about slipping in the shower and falling statistics and drowning in a inch of water statistics because my hair is clogging the drain. That maybe, but like, why would we talk statistics of drowning if I'm standing on the shore? You know, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, my odds of cutting myself or doing something in the way that you're thinking about it, probably not as likely. Now, that's different than something like that's just ungodly stupid. Like,
well,
like when you can clearly
be careful when they're cutting, something's different from discussing drowning statistics.
Yeah, but you
that's just like a cautionary thing. Like, hey, be careful.
Well, it's also fingers. If you think about it, it's redundant too. Because what am I trying to cut my fingers? It's like saying
sometimes it's complacency because you've done it so many times that you're cocky in a way, like everybody, you know, and you're not thinking about it. And that's when you get cut. The best people in the world, the best chefs in the world still get bit by their tool.
I understand that. I get bit by my tools often, and not in tattooing, but Because that would be bad if I got tattooed up by my tattoo machine. I don't do that. But what I mean is like you have to exercise best practices when it comes to the masses because of the sheer quantity to which you're delivering product. You have to have a little bit more, like a wherewithal of what you're doing. So on a professional level, I would expect anyone to have a higher awareness of it. It's like, you know, in fishing, if you haven't done all kinds of fishing, how would you know the difference between all these different ways to fish until you fished it? You know,
there is a universal way to fish for all types of fish, which is basically what we've been doing, chumming, putting cut bait on a hook and leaving it out there. That honestly works for everything, but like depending on where you go in the world or in the country, in your own state, in your own county, people have like specialized ways that are more effective than the universal way of fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Like they'll have like a special rig set up where the weight is X amount of height from the hook or different types of rigs.
I know, but that's what I'm saying is that like a person who just eats fish, who's never gone fishing, would know none of that. That's what I'm saying is that you can literally.
Well, I think you know, somebody that's never been fishing knows, okay, I need a fishing rod, I need to put a hook, a line, and I need to get this thing to the bottom. So that's what I'm saying. Universally, people know to use a hook and some bait. Like everybody's going to think, put some worms on the hook. Mm-hmm. Even people that haven't fished before will go and catch fish the first time they go fishing because you have that universal method, which is just the bait and hook.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm just saying that like it's one of those things that, you catch the fish,
mm-hmm.
you can kill the fish, but like, if you're a person who's never handled a fish, that can be confronting. Okay. Now I have the fish. It's like cats when they catch the thing that they have been like scoping out and then they're like, oh shit, I caught it. I don't know what to do with it now. What do I do with it? Let it go. And then they let go. And then they're freaking out because they can't even touch it really, you know?
They'll figure it out. It's
they might get cut.
They'll figure it out because like fishing, hunting, all of these are base instinctual behaviors.
Well,
we deep down know all this shit already.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not with the computers and technology, but just like hunting, fishing.
Well, your primal sensibilities like will yes. kick in. I know, but I think that those things. From my estimation have been watered down that I've seen in people like I've met people that don't know things that I know. And it was like, I was talking about today with Steve is that like, you know, and with my dent, I recently got my teeth cleaned, everyone. I'm so happy that my dental appointment got to stay on schedule. That was freaking awesome. Cause I hate rescheduling. I was talking about this, my dental hygienist, you know, like, she said that like a lot of the people that are still shut in from the virus, you know, of course they're elderly. I understand their apprehension, but the longer they stay inside, the longer they will stay inside and the more anxious they get. And she's like, they're afraid to come out to get their teeth clean. And I was like, well, in my upbringing, I was exposed to horses. And horseback riding. And from the age of 8 to 16, I rode horses and they're huge fight flight animals, but particularly fear-based pack animals that have been hunted like elk and things like that. And they stick together, but they're like a huge freaking, dog deer or what, I don't know what you would call it, but you ride them and you're trying to bond with this animal and predict it. And so you have to, it's really big and it can hurt you really fast. Horse is an
equine.
Yes. Equine. And they can hurt you. So you have to learn. And I had to learn from a very young age, the responsibility of being around and interpreting animals that could potentially really hurt you. and how to move around them. And I think that's an experience that a lot of people have been exposed to. And that was just a passion of mine. I loved horses. I was that horse girl. And I enjoy them. I miss them because I honestly just like being around them. I like doing the muck work, like just cleaning up after them and mucking stalls and being out early and smelling hay and waking up with them and watching them run. I find them very majestic and calming, kind of like, you know, it's probably the way your dad thinks about going out on the bay and fishing and experience. That's how I feel around horses. But there's danger. I mean, there's danger in both things. You just have to have best practices so that you don't get hurt. And even when you do have those and you do know, shit can happen. I have a client that she got her knee completely kicked out by a horse. And, you know, it was an accident.
Mortadella.
And she still rides and she still loves horses. And, you know, it happens that way sometimes. You know, you can't always, but you have to love it. As long as you're in alignment with things that you love and you're sincere about that, I think that the animals understand the integral part of that and that people do. And the one thing I said to my dentist was, I said, you know, when you grow up around animals, particularly farm animals, and if you're even entertaining buying one of the first things that you do is look at their teeth. And I said, you know, it's funny to me that you would sacrifice your dental appointment because that's a really keen view into somebody's health. And, you know, obviously you guys are guarding yourself or the best people to guard yourself against something like this. And if you're, you know, here and willing to do, you know, cleanings, you're obviously feel safe in your precautions that you're taking. And I think that it's important for me to get my teeth clean. Like, I think that's a part of my health and well-being. I'm willing to risk it. And I feel like dental hygiene is one of the first tiers things, especially if you're talking about something that's oral and we're all wearing these fucking masks all the time, which is keeping all of the bacteria that we're supposed to be expelling from us and let us go back into the air and get away from us. It's keeping everything so close to our faces that it's important for us to, you know. Plus, when I get depressed too, I grind my teeth more and everything. So I didn't know. I wasn't putting my occlusal guard in as often. Yeah, yada, yada, yada. But just to let you guys know about me personally, like there's a time. If you've been listening to the podcast, you know I've gotten emotional. There's times where, you know, I was grinding my teeth. I had my guard in. I wanted all these things to be looked at. So for me, my medical appointments are really important. Mm-hmm. So, and that's how I kind of approach my clients too. It's just a very straightforward, if you want to talk about something, let's talk about it. I'm pretty sure that I can coach you in the best way. Because if I haven't experienced it, I'm going to be very, very concerned about getting you answers. More often than not, if it's beyond my capacity to help you, I'll refer you to a medical professional. I do the consultations so we can talk about all that stuff first. I do everything first, either a really lengthy phone call, consultation. It's usually an hour. Sometimes it's longer. I can do Zoom meetings now because that's something that everybody's been integrating. So I think more people know about Zoom and virtual meeting spaces, so we can do that. Whichever you want. I just enjoy something that is prior. And I like the physical part of being in person. So this has been an hour.
Nope.
Well, almost.
More. 54 minutes.
54 minutes.
And 20 seconds.
I hope that's been informative.
Oh, hell yeah, it has been. Learned about recipes.
Yep. If nothing else, everybody, practice eye contact and giving a firm handshake. I can't stress that enough.
And when you give that firm handshake and you look them in the eye, go, I had some pee on my hands.
Oh, you're terrible.
And then grip harder. and maintain eye contact.
I will say this. There are people that I've noticed that, like, when they notice I have a firm handshake, they'll squeeze harder. And I'm like, oh, we're doing this now. Okay. I'll just let go at that point because I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing that. I made myself known. If you need to squeeze a little harder, now we're doing this.
You
patronize women.
I do them, my lady.
And I hope you're ready to get slapped one day.
What? I don't kiss anybody's hand. I just go,
my lady.
Cause what the hell? Like, clearly.
I mean, any girl is gonna be like, "Oh, he cute."
Yeah, cause I'm fucking, you know, it's like, why am I gonna try to crush a woman?
It's the safest bet, but I
my lady.
Again, grew up in a business family. You look somebody in the eye, you give them a firm handshake. If somebody's to do something to me, they have to know that I'm watching them. I'm gonna be watching them. So
tell me who's watching.
So, and I, you know, it's one of those initial things that's just like you're kind of introducing yourself to the room. It's not even meant to be aggressive. It's just supposed to be, you know, we're doing this. I'm sincere. You're sincere. We can relax. I've had clients be really nervous and just not be able to calm down. They're like, I don't know why I'm so nervous. I'm like, I don't know either. but you know, you take your time. You don't have to worry about it. I'm like, nothing's going to happen today. Nothing's going to happen imminently. Nothing doesn't happen at all if you don't want to. If you don't like anything about this conversation, you can fully walk away and never have to see me again. That it's fine. I won't be mad. So yeah. Hopefully that's been helpful about client relations. Whenever you're vetting a tattoo artist, I think it's important to do a little research first on the client level. Definitely look them up. Definitely.
That's the way to do everything is to do your research first.
Well, you would think, but you know, I do think that there's everybody has their different way of doing things. You just have to take responsibility for how you actually, you know, what effort you put in is how much you can expect to get out usually. So if you put a lot of effort in, you're probably going to get a lot more out. And you know, that's how I've maintained a lot of great relationships with working professionals is I've just been willing to do my research, figure out how they like to be contacted, be very gracious at first, spend the time communicating. Even if somebody's a douchebag to me online, I spend the time communicating just to see. I mean, I do my fishing there. I play with them the way I played with that stingray today. You know, like just reel them in and see how, you know, douchey they can be. Mm-hmm. And then I let them back. And then I'm like, okay, you know, that was a social experiment to which I learned something. I recognize that a lot faster about this person. But yeah, like, stuff like that. I like people. So for me, having all of these kind of interactions, not taxing. I can understand how it'd be taxing for other people, but it's not taxing for me. I actually enjoy it. So we'll hit you back next week.
Yep. Thank you for listening.
Something might transpire between now and then. If you would like to interview, please hit us up. The credits will show how to contact us. You can either email, drop me a DM.
At The Apprenticeship Diaries.
Yeah, we're on Facebook. We're on the Twitters. We're on
tweet, tweets.
We have a Patreon account with no Patreons right now, but that's fine.
Zero.
I think I'm a little delinquent. I think I forgot to put the last episode up. So I'm admitting that right now. I'll have to do both. This one and the last one. But the last one was a mental health one. So please forgive me, folks. I've been a little delinquent, but I'm going to get back on it because y'all are important to me.
It's summertime.
Well, it's summertime. I'm learning a lot. So that's kind of where I'm at with the Apprenticeship Diaries. This is kind of a moving art piece for me. So you know, when you're listening to this, hopefully years from now, you'll be like, oh, I remember that.
And that crunching in the background is Ickes eating. He literally goes to his dry food bowl, picks up some dry food, carries it out to where we are, spits it on the floor, and then eats it.
One thing at a time, because he wants to eat with us. He likes...
Every time.
And I think he also likes eating out of my shoes, particularly my water shoes, because they smell like fish.
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I'm trying to season my food.
I'm gonna put my water shoes on tomorrow and be like, oh shit, there's Ickes food.
Mm-hmm.
Oh well. All right, Apprenticeship Diary listeners, we love you. Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Have a great week, and we'll catch you next week. Bye.
See you.
If you would like to reach out to us at The Apprenticeship Diaries, we hope that you do. You can email us at theapprenticeshipdiaries@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram. The Instagram account is @the_apprenticeship_diaries. Please feel free to follow us. We hope that you do. We'd also like to grow platforms and have more listening venues. Please feel free to contact us any way you'd like, and definitely contact us if you'd like to interview. Thank you. Here we go.
Wait.
Do you know how to do the osprey sound?
What?
The osprey sound.
What do they do? The I don't know. What do they make? What kind of fucking sound they make?
It's like, but I can't do it. but your dad does it really, really good. He is a seahawk.
Fishhawk.
Cool. Let's hear this sound check.